Hello, this is Frankly Speaking, an informational exchange of problems and issues of relevance to people everywhere. Today's program addresses the subject of equal employment opportunity and affirmative action. To elaborate on the subject, we're talking with Frank Matthews, Affirmative Action EEO Director at George Mason University. For many, the terms affirmative action and equal employment opportunity are the same, yet in reality they differ. The laws of the United States interpret these terms as having separate meanings, and in several agencies there are two people directing very different yet similar programs. In some instances, the personnel director is responsible for equal employment opportunity. Some people equate complaints and lawsuits with the terminology. Still, there is the positive impact of diverse staff recruitment. The greatest influence of these words evolved during the 60s and has continued until the 80s. To elaborate on the subject of what AAEEO really means to the general public is our guest Frank Matthews. Mr. Matthews completed his undergraduate work in political science at Clemson University and obtained a Master's of Business and Juris Doctor from the University of South Carolina. What is affirmative action so our audience knows what we're talking about?
Affirmative action is a set of regulations that were promulgated by the executive branch of the government, originally drawn up by President Kennedy. What it requires is that those agencies receiving federal aid take actions to assure that blacks and other minorities are represented in their employment forces and in the activities that they carry on.
How long has George Mason University had an active affirmative action program?
The university's affirmative action program actually began in 1978.
How long does it take to actually develop a program? Because, as we all know, things might be in the planning stages for many years before it takes, you know, evolution.
Yes, that's what happened at George Mason. We got quite a bit of impetus as a result of a state settlement with the Office of Civil Rights, the State Council of Higher Education. But to answer the question, the longevity involved in getting a program depends to a large extent on the size of the institution involved and the number of governmental contracts that are held by the agency.
I noticed that you have worked in close conjunction with the NAACP. Are they a firm believer of and supporter of affirmative action?
Yes, the basic thrust behind most of the organizations that support affirmative action is the realization that affirmative action deals with recompense. A lot of times people don't understand the difference between affirmative action and equal employment opportunity. Affirmative action deals with the task of getting people on an equal footing so that they can compete equally. Therefore, affirmative action deals with recompense, whereas equal employment opportunity deals with the assumption that everyone is equal. This is why you have an executive order dealing with affirmative action and a legislative mandate coming out of Congress dealing with equal employment opportunity. The new administration has threatened to disband affirmative action. They can't disband equal employment opportunity. The problem with that is that if you disband affirmative action, you are now saying that everyone is capable and able to compete on an equal basis. Therefore, there will not be job designations as AA/EEO. There will only be EEO officers at universities and in other contracting agencies.
There has been a lot of controversy about reverse discrimination, and I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Yes, what reverse discrimination is a term that came up primarily with the Bakke case of a couple of years ago. It relates to the idea of who must sacrifice in order for past injustices to be corrected. Given the austere budgets that we're all faced with, and given the social goals of affirmative action, what often happens is that you have minority set-aside programs. These are the kinds of programs that we feel will be most threatened with the new Reagan administration. What we will be seeing more of are programs that emphasize good faith efforts, but not numerical goals, which have been interpreted as being reverse discrimination.
Does a total freeze on the U.S. government federal hiring practices, such as Mr. Reagan has recently instituted, affect affirmative action?
Yes, to a very large extent, given the given the current racial makeups and sexual makeups in the federal government, a freeze will definitely have an adverse impact. If affirmative action officers do their task, what they will do in the future is then turn their attention to upward mobility, which is a vital aspect of affirmative action. One of the things as it affects females is the congregation of female employees in most sectors in the government and the private sector at the bottom of the totem pole, generally in the clerical pools. Affirmative action efforts should then be directed toward moving those female employees up the corporate ladder, up the governmental ladder. So with a hiring freeze, hopefully the effort will then be focused on getting those women out of the typing pools in the federal government and up the ladder to some of the higher GS ratings.
There have been a lot of different theories about that. I know that years ago you used to be able to come into a company at the bottom rank and work your way up to the top of the ladder. At least it was true in middle America, specifically for a lot of white males who didn't necessarily have the education.
Yes.
That is not necessarily proving true for women in general and other minorities now. Why is that the case?
A lot of the time, in a lot of instances, the women and other minorities come to the job without the basic training that's necessary for the firm or for the organization. Therefore, affirmative action efforts have to be directed toward on-the-job training, upward mobility programs. Here at the university, for instance, we strongly encourage our female employees to take courses at the university so that they can become skilled and become professional while at the same time earning an income. Pursuant to that, we have a tuition remission program, and we again push women on that very hard. What that means is that any employee at the university who takes a course being offered at the university does not have to pay for that course, and we think that that's a benefit. They can work and be trained simultaneously, so we're pushing that very hard as an aspect of that. As far as the problem is concerned, again, in a lot of instances, the female employees and the other minority employees have not asserted themselves in the organization once they got there. And a lot of times the channels have not been open for upward mobility. So affirmative action not only deals with the actual decision of who gets the job originally, but what happens to the individual once he becomes a part of the organization or firm.
There was a time during the 60s and early 70s when there were a lot of class action suits. The EEOC had several lawsuits within their records and files that needed to be processed. Is the day of the lawsuit over?
The lawsuits are generally brought under the Equal Employment Opportunity legislation. You generally hear about that in terms of Title VII. Title VII is the broadest-based legislative mandate that relates to equal employment opportunity. The others are more specific in nature, i.e., the Equal Pay Act, Title IX, which relates to sex discrimination in athletics and these kinds of things. But most of those actions are brought under Title VII. There have been some extremely large decisions made about affecting under Title VII. General Electric had to pay some $15 million because of discriminatory practice. Firestone had to come up with over $15 million. And the cases go on and on. In fact, the U.S. Printing Office just last year had to pay female employees $16 million. They reached a $16 million settlement as a result of a lawsuit. So litigation is the way to go after all of the administrative remedies have been exhausted.
I've briefly looked over the statistics at George Mason University. And I find that our statistics are probably quite good in comparison to a lot of other agencies, especially in Virginia. But I know that Virginia has been known for discrimination, and also there have been some problems in the state in reference to the statistics not being high enough.
Yes. That was the basis of the settlement that was signed by Governor Dalton immediately after he came to office. The previous governor, Godwin, had decided that he would not in any way indicate that the state system of higher education in Virginia had previously discriminated against women and minorities. That factual showing that indeed this has happened has resulted in a number of special activities in the state of Virginia as it relates to higher education. Namely, we have things like the incentive grants, and what that means is that there is an attempt to integrate the schools of higher education institutions in the state of Virginia. Any black student who decides to go to a predominantly white school will receive a $1,000 one-shot grant. Any white student who decides to go to either Norfolk State or Virginia State will likewise receive the same grant. This is an attempt to get a more balanced higher education system in Virginia. The idea is to integrate the UVAs and the Virginia Techs of Virginia, while at the same time integrating the Norfolk States and Virginia States of the state of Virginia.
Do you have any input or any thoughts that you would like to share to our audience in reference to black history and the strides that have been made in affirmative action?
Yes, the biggest thing about black history is that it's a time to reflect on the contributions that blacks have made to American society. It's a time to appreciate the diversity in this society, and at the same time to realize that we have a long way to go. The statistics that you just referred to indicate over and over again that blacks still are at the bottom of the economic totem pole. They're still at the bottom of the educational totem pole, and this is why affirmative action programs are greatly needed, because until we have a more equitable system in the society, then we're going to have to come up with ways to achieve just that.
I'd like to thank you for being here today. We've been talking with Frank Matthews, who's the Affirmative Action Officer at George Mason University, in charge of EEOC and all of our affirmative action. Mr. Matthews has a Juris Doctorate and has been at George Mason University for how long?
I've been here 4 years. I'm on the business law faculty. I teach in the School of Business Administration, and I thought that I would make a contribution to the university, so I've temporarily left the classroom, but hopefully if we can get some of the things accomplished that we want to, I'll be returning to teaching on a full-time basis in the relatively near future.
I have one last question. What relationship does law have to affirmative action?
The rules and regulations that relate to affirmative action are the basis of litigation. I think that in order to be an effective affirmative action officer, you almost have to have a law degree, which is one of the problems that has hampered affirmative action processes. In a lot of organizations, you've put people in an affirmative action director's job who just haven't been trained and don't have the background. I think that the fact that I was invited to take the position at George Mason is indicative of the university's commitment to the program. They knew that you needed someone who could effectively deal with those things that had to be dealt with. Therefore, I'm affirmative action director, at least temporarily.
Unfortunately, our time is up. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program produced by George Mason University. Production coordinator, Pat Ping. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.